Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Anyone who listens to this program knows that Louise Penny is one of our favorites. She is renowned for fiction that combines heartbreak and hope and offers a window into the human soul. She is the author of the beloved Chief Inspector Gamache series. Her newest book in that series is The Long Way Home, and it is a beautiful addition to the collection. Also, there is The Collected Works, which is just out, a box set of the first three Chief Inspector Gamache novels, Still Life, A Fatal Grace, and The Cruelest Month. So a lot going on in the life of Louise Penny. So it's a great pleasure to welcome her back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's great. Will you marry me? I think I love you.
Well, I love you right back. It's always nice to speak to you. And, you know, here's the thing, and maybe stop me if this sounds corny, but you see a lot of authors who work really hard and they have their books come out. And to see you succeed and have these books just take off and be so successful, that makes my heart very happy.
Oh, bless you for that. No, genuinely, I feel almost actually on the verge of tears. You know, that's how I feel too. It comes as such a surprise that this has happened. I mean, you dream of it, you want it. I would lie in bed or in the bath and I would fantasize about it. But, you know, you never actually expect that it will happen. And not a moment goes by, Joe, I can tell you this honestly, that I am not very aware of how lucky I am.
So is there a point where you try to dissect it, or is that the death of it? In the sense of, do you say, okay, what is it about the character? And not so you can pat yourself on the back, but more so you don't screw it up, right? Say, okay, how do I keep doing this?
I want a divorce. No, but, you know, that is so true. That is so, because I'm just riddled with fear, and that's obviously, and the fear shifts as my career progresses and some fears disappear and others pop up, and that is one of my fears now, is that I have been given everything that I have dreamed of and that somehow I will drop it, I will break it. And I think, you know, that's such an interesting question about how much do you dissect, how much do you look at what it is that I do, and, you know, how much do I look at what I've done and created. Some of it can't be helped because of interviews, for instance, and asked, you know, good questions like, why is the series so successful? And these are questions I would not normally consciously ask myself, but have been forced to. So it's, I am wary of it because I, as you know from talking to so many authors, one of the dangers, particularly when you write in a genre, is becoming formulaic. And so one of the concerns is identifying my own formula and keep doing it over and over. So I really don't want to do that.
And
at the same time, I can't help being somewhat self-aware.
Sure. And how much of it do you think is just in the DNA, in the sense of the books that you write have such an emotional depth? And to me, that's something that, as a writer, you either have or you don't. And when you have it, you bring us into that depth, and it is fascinating to see and what draws us in.
Thank you for that. I was just reminded, you know, I put some poetry in the books, and I read a lot of poetry, and
right.
I'm inspired by poetry. And one of my favorites is Auden. And Auden, in his elegy to Yeats, after Yeats died, obviously, wrote, one of the lines was, "Mad Ireland hurt him into poetry." I mean, isn't that amazing? It tells you everything you need to know about Ireland, about Yeats, and about poetry.
Right.
But I sort of feel the same way. That's why I didn't start writing until I was well into my 40s. I tried in my 20s, but I really had nothing to say. And I was writing for the wrong reason. I wanted accolades. I wanted my teachers who had failed me to be proud of me. I wanted my mother to be proud. I wanted my brothers to applaud. But it was all for the wrong reasons. It was for external gratification. And I finally got to the stage in my 40s where I had been hurt enough and brought to my knees enough that I had learned the power of compassion, of forgiveness. But I had also learned hatred I'd learned jealousy. I'd learned what it feels like to be consumed, to want something or someone so badly that I was destroying myself and destroying all that I actually had for something that I didn't have. I had gotten to that stage where finally I had a well of things to call on, both vile and blessed.
That's fascinating, because it's our maturation as humans, as we grow and change and hopefully become wiser or at least more aware, that that's really when we're able to do this stuff. And yet you see people who do it when they're young, but I don't quite understand how they do it.
That's where the jealousy comes in.
Right.
I could kill them.
It's like, how do you have all this figured out?
Life how hasn't, does that happen?
Right. Life hasn't had a good bat at you yet. How does that happen? So
I content myself by somehow believing that they can't be happy.
Well, that's true.
I'm sure they're very happy.
And that often plays out, doesn't it? The character of Armand Gamache, give us a sense of how you view this character, and as a way of telling these stories and as a way of tapping what you just described.
He is a decent man in a kind of an indecent atmosphere. He is a good man. He has integrity. He's inspired by a number of people, including my husband, who was the head of hematology at the Montreal Children's. He was sort of the doctor no one ever wanted to meet because of his terrible job dealing with children with cancer. Mm. But Michael was the happiest man in the world, not because dying children gave him pleasure. They obviously didn't. It was because Michael understood what a great gift life is. And I imbued Gamache with that quality, I hope. Is that Gamache deals with death all the time, but he is a happy and content man because he knows what a gift life is and what a betrayal it would be of people who don't get to live it, if those of us who do don't live it with gratitude and with awareness and with kindness and with love. So he is a decent man. And I thought he's quite unusual in detective fiction, where there seems to be a truism that drama is conflict. And for me, I don't think that's necessarily true. I think there's a huge amount of human drama in just delving deeper into characters, into good people trying to be good when terrible things are happening.
As I mentioned, there is also a box set now of the first three Gamache novels. And what is that like? Do you go back and read them? Is that a good process?
No. I'm actually looking forward to one day being old and gray and by the fire and pulling down Still Life, the first book, and reading it again. I'm afraid to read them again. I'm afraid that they will either be so good that I feel I can't match the early books and haven't, or that I will be disappointed with them, or that I'm not really sure what that fear is. As I said, I'm riddled with fears, so that's one more fear to examine one day. It's another kind of milestone along the way, these little markers in a career, and certainly having a box set. I mean, I never thought I'd have one book, never mind three, and now a box set it's very meaningful.
You were talking about for me.
All my friends know what they're getting for Christmas.
Well, yes, absolutely. You know, you were talking about formula, and you were talking about, you know, trying to keep it going, and but this is the new book, The Long Way Home. It's the 10th book. Compared to Still Life, I mean, you definitely feel that you have progressed, and that I assume you look at this and say, okay, I'm doing the best I can do right now.
Yes. Thank you for that. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the hope, is that you get better and better and better as I become more confident, as I become a better writer. There's a phrase I use in The Long Way Home. It's as I was writing the book, Seamus Heaney died, the Irish poet.
Right.
And his do you remember what his last words were?
I do not.
His last words, it was publicized, to his wife, were noli temere. Noli temere, Latin for be not afraid.
Mm.
And I use that in The Long Way Home. because The Long Way Home is about a journey, obviously. It's about home.
Sure.
It's about the external search for home, but also the internal search for home. And to find it, we have to go through a lot of fear. And that's what, in each new book, I try to stretch and try to get outside my comfort zone. And I have a poster up that says Noise to Mary, and I've put it right in front of me so that when I'm writing and I get very afraid and I want to fall back into convention, I look at it and I say, Noli to Mary, be not afraid.
I had a similar conversation with Michael Connelly for his last novel, and we were talking about, as you progress, of getting better. And he looked at me and he took my arm and he said, but don't ever think that means that it's easier.
Perfect. Well, that actually fits in very well with my own thinking, too. For me, some things are getting easier in that early on, when I was writing the first and second and third books, I didn't know that I could write a book. I thought that there was something magic about the first book and maybe even the second. I didn't really know how it happened. Now I know I can write a book. I just don't know. You know, we started off talking about screwing it up. I don't know whether they're good or good enough or better. I have no children. These are my children.
Right.
And so it's important to me that each of them be something I can be proud of and can get put out into the world and know that they are worth your time and effort and money.
Given my career, I'm fascinated by this, and I realize that I don't think I've ever asked you about this. But you were a CBC radio journalist for a good long time. Do you ever miss that?
No. I still have nightmares about it. No. Do you have nightmares about your... Like I have nightmares that I can't find the studio. I've lost the script. I'm suddenly naked. Like, what are your nightmares?
Well, very similar. You know, that you show up and you don't have what you're supposed to read, or that the thing that you work so hard on doesn't play. Or yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But is there...
No,
is...
I don't... For me, it had run its course. I was very lucky to be able to do a job that I enjoyed for so long and to listen to people so closely. And few people got on my show without something exceptional happening to them, either exceptionally good or exceptionally bad. So I did get to see people in extreme circumstances. And I think that has really informed a lot of the books as well. But I grew tired. I grew tired of seeing the world. I did a current affairs show, a news show. I got tired of seeing the world as a dangerous, dark, threatening place, as one does if you're surrounded by, for the most part, that kind of news. And I became fearful and started having panic attacks. And I knew that something had to change, and clearly the news was not going to change. So I had to remove myself and regroup. And, you know, part of that hurt into poetry was regroup and readjust my worldview and realize that the world is a good place. Evil happens. There is, you know, evil in the world, but there is goodness as well.
So then you write murder mysteries. And...
Yeah, go figure. I think I have CBC to thank for that.
but it allows you then to write the story so that there is the hope and the understanding that you wish existed in the world without being overly psychological about it.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's not. I think for me, honestly, it's more than a wish. I in changing my worldview and changing some of the people I had around me and my environment and whatnot, I realized that, in fact, it does exist. It's like a prism, and I just had to change it slightly, how I was looking at it. And the world didn't change, obviously. My perception of it did. And I know that goodness exists. It exists. The world I create in Three Pines, the fictional village, is the world I see every day. I mean, it's slightly idealized, but for the most part, it really isn't. There is a lot of beauty and a lot of good in the world, and violence and terrible acts. That has become my belief.
Well,
and then I get to write about it, as you said. That's the beauty of writing these books, is that I have an outlet for the world I see, and I don't expect everyone to believe the same thing or to enjoy it or to come along for the ride, but it is how I view the world.
Louise Penny's latest novel is The Long Way Home. There's also the box set, which includes Still Life, A Fatal Grace, and The Cruelest Month. It's the first three Gamache novels in a lovely box set. Louise Penny, I love speaking to you. I hope you have a wonderful holiday season.
You too. Thank you for this, Joe.
Thank you very much. Be well. Again, the name of the book is The Long Way Home. It is published by Minotaur. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.